Rowdy.
Well, I like that Travis Pastrana has set himself up with a Buck Fever goal for the season.
And what's the Buck Fever goal?
Try not to look like an idiot.
On a skateboard?
Rowdy Racing News.
One Travis takes a step in,
while another takes a step up.
Nelson has his interest piqued,
but he's taken the long view.
Plus, yes, my friends, cars hit the track in Daytona Beach.
JF will be back for MK.
And Casey bucks the Red Bull trend, going to a single-digit number buck. Today is Wednesday, December 15th. I'm Leonard Masters.
I'm Buck Fever. And Bass, we are all well and truly into the offseason now, and you can tell by a three-day-a-week Rowdy podcast scenario. But you could say that the first 2011 season activity got underway at Daytona.
Gets underway today. That's where Goodyear and several drivers are testing out the new pavement at the track in preparation for February's Daytona 500.
The goal is for Goodyear to home in on the new tire package, not hone in on, but home in on the new tire package for the race. The track should feature a lot more grip than it has in the past.
Yeah, hone in and home in, those are often confused. Like sometimes people say they're going to flush it out.
Yeah.
It's actually flesh it out.
Like, oh,
put
got
flesh
it
on the bones.
Yeah. Irregardless.
Well, flush it out is like putting it down the toilet.
You got it.
You don't want to do that. Kurt Busch and Penske Racing will be at the test, and they'll try to put their time to good use. The 2004 champ would also like a crack at some other tracks in the future.
We just want track data. We need to get back to testing at tracks that we race on. I hope that change comes about for next season as well. We should be able to choose 4 to 5 tracks as a program. So Hendrick gets to choose their 4 or 5. Penske gets to choose the 4 or 5 they want to go to and go test.
A lot of the teams are skipping the test. They're figuring they will be better prepared in January when the track opens up again.
Yeah, like we talked about on Monday, Buck, a lot of teams are working on new cars, which aren't ready yet. So why waste your time? Now over at Busch's shop, Travis Geisler is moving up the ranks.
Sam Hornish's erstwhile crew chief has been made competition director for the organization, and he's still a pretty young guy.
Yeah, the organization being Penske Racing, of course. And Travis is an engineer who has moved up the ranks pretty quickly, Buck. I think he's like right around 30 years old or something, 30, 31, somewhere in there. He actually had a few nationwide starts as a driver back in the year 2004.
How about that?
Did
now,
you know that, Buck?
I did not know that. Another Travis Pastrana, talked about his future plans yesterday as the Moto X GameStar is ready to go NASCAR racing with his newly formed Pastrami Waltrip Racing.
That's Pastrana Waltrip Racing Team. And Buck, I don't know what to call him, a motocross star, an action, maybe you should just call him an action sports star.
Well,
isn't that what they call those things?
He's
action sports?
Yeah, he's won motocross.
He drives rally cars.
He's won rally,
You know, I don't know how to describe the guy. We'll have extensive excerpts in just a second from Pastrana's teleconference, but he was behind the wheel of a stock car for the very first time this Monday and Tuesday.
His first competition will be the Toyota All-Star Showdown in January in Irwindale, California, Bass, but he is also planning on running 7 nationwide races.
Ah, yes, the old Danica plan, and our buddy Bob Pockers wanted to know if Travis had a chance to get any helpful tips from any of the more seasoned drivers he'll be racing against.
And finally, can you say, did Carl Edwards give you any advice over at the Race of Champions?
I think the best thing, Carl, I give Carl a hard time because we did the Nations Cup and I won 2 of the 3 races, and Carl had some really tough draws but didn't win any of the 3, so I was giving him crap. He goes, when I'm lapping you for the 3rd time in your first nationwide race, I'm going to put you in the wall. And he was joking, but you know, that's pretty much the best advice he gave me, was that don't expect to be running up front for a while. So
another new face to NASCAR had his own teleconference this week, Bass, and that was Brazilian Nelson Piquet Jr.
The former F1 driver will pilot one of Kevin Harvick's trucks full-time in 2011 and did quite respectably last season in the few races that he ran.
3 top 10s and 5 starts in the Camping World Truck Series with another top 10 in the nationwide race at Watkins Glen. He's sort of on the anti-Danica plan, Bass, taking his time and moving up the ranks slowly.
This is a long-term plan to reach Cup when I'm prepared and being part of the whole NASCAR group. You know, I don't want to start jumping series and getting there and thinking that I deserve being in NASCAR Cup, because I know that's not the way it works and that's not the way I wanted to do it. I want to get there because I deserve, because teams want me to be there, not because I'm going to bring a sponsor and just be part of the whole thing.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
Matt Kenseth kept refreshing his crew chiefs last year, going from Drew Blickensterfer to Todd Parrott and eventually to veteran Jimmy Fenwick.
Denning won the 2004 championship with Kurt Busch, of course, and it sounds like Matt is really happy with him.
We had a long talk after the season. Jimmy's going to come back and do it again. I mean, he's kind of wasn't sure if he would or not. I don't want to say he's old, but he's older, and he's been doing it for a really, really long time. But, man, Jimmy is awesome. He's a great racer.
Of course, the biggest event of the offseason, Buck, is Samantha Sarcinella's wedding.
As in Kyle Busch's wedding.
Well, I guess you could look at it that way. And the groom-to-be says, what, me worry?
Nah, I'm good. I'm ready to go. So she's done a great job at planning much of it, of course. And, you know, now that we're getting closer to the time, I can kind of see how everything is and what to expect when we get there and, you know, get done with it.
Get done with it. Gosh, what a romantic.
Yeah, dude, if you're not worried yet, you will be.
And what I thought was quite heartening, Bass, was the help Jeff Gordon offered him with the assistance of Tony Stewart.
Back in Las Vegas, of all places.
I'll give you the card to some lawyers and other things, too.
This was my opinion on it.
You've already got the document drawn up, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I got you covered, man. Listen, I would tell you one thing. I don't know much about marriage, but I'm an expert at divorce.
I'm not an expert on either, but I'll tell you one damn thing. That girl never drove one lap in that race car. She didn't deserve his money.
Tony got some good news last week with the U.S. Army coming back on the 39 car of Ryan Newman for Stuart Haas Racing.
That's only for a partial schedule, however. I think it's, what, 15 races, Buck? So that means good seats are still available, according to Smoke.
We still need more for Ryan's car, obviously, but, you know, we got a great staff that's working on it, and we feel like we've got a lot to offer. We actually have, I think, some potential to tie in some opportunities on our car to help with Ryan's, too.
And finally today, Bass, if you thought Casey Kane would be taking over Scott Speed's old number, 82, at Red Bull Racing, not so. Think again.
Okay.
What are you doing?
I'm thinking again.
What did you come up with?
Well, I've discovered via Twitter that Casey will drive the number 4 car for Red Bull next season, an affront to Morgan McClure fans everywhere.
Yeah.
83 and 4? What does 83 have to do with 4?
I don't know. 4 is a good number, Bass. It's also Casey's sprint car number, not his sprint cup. Well, now it is his sprint cup.
Right.
And sprint car number.
Yeah.
Sterling ran that number, and Ward ran that number.
Yep. A lot of good guys.
Gary Baker ran the number.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, what we have on the rest of the show today, Buck, is more from Travis Pastrana. And then our buddy Brittany's coming by to give some relationship advice to drivers and crew chiefs everywhere.
You got to love that.
Yeah. She was in the other day. And we always love having her come around. So look forward to that. And musically, we have
Pretty Lights, which is sort of techno type deal.
Where'd you get that from?
It's free on the internet.
Oh.
And John Butler.
I thought everything was free on the internet.
Me too.
We'll see. Trivia?
How many cup races did Richard Petty win in 1967? Stay tuned for the answer.
The devil made me do it. The devil made me do it.
I'll answer one more ignorant question. Ignorant question.
Rowdy.
You hear the hell there, boy, better get it red. Hello, hello, what's going with your head? Hell there, boy, better get it red. Hello, hello, what's going with your head? Hell there, boy, better get it red. Hello, hello, what's going with your head? Hell there, boy, better get it red. Used to be so real, all of your love, everybody to be. But now you're turning into a fake. And all of our hearts, yeah, you do break. Cause all those drugs that you do.
I think we've established pretty much that Travis Pastrana is basically fearless.
I guess so, Buck, and hopefully that won't get him into trouble when he gets behind the wheel in one of these crazy stock cars.
I think it might actually get him into trouble. I mean, it's a lesson he knows he's probably going to have to
learn.
You
got to slow down to go fast, Buck. That's what I always say.
Driver Talk.
What was your first impression of a stock car at New Smyrna Speedway?
It was absolutely awesome. Had a lot of fun. Wasn't sure, you know, running the East car, so it was, you know, with the ply tires, you could still slide it a bit, and it was a really good car to kind of get a base feel. You know, there were a couple guys testing the nationwide cars or whatnot out there, so that was a little bit more challenging. But I think for a first step, this was just an absolute blast. You know, really look forward to getting in with more people and, you know, kind of see how it works from there.
Congratulations on not crashing a car, but did you spin out at all? How many laps did it take for that to happen? And if you didn't even spin, what was the biggest oh shit moment that you had in 2 days?
Honestly, no spins, no problems. Got up to speed, you know, within about, I'd say within 3/10 of my best lap. Was probably within, you know, the first hour of testing. Had one where I came in, I was trying to carry more speed into the corner. We were with Matt Crafton. He was saying that, you know, I was braking a little too hard on the entry and then wasn't carrying enough speed through the middle, so I didn't brake as hard. I ended up in a full block drift, or actually bent the control arm. It was so far out, and I thought for sure I was going on the wall, but actually just carried a full block drift around the entire corner and then popped out perfect. I mean, it wasn't my fastest lap, but it was a lot of fun. They said I wouldn't have been so lucky in the nationwide car, but other than that, there was no problems at all. Really, really felt good in the car, and I think that was everyone was really happy with how it turned out.
Hey, Travis, I was just wondering, you know, coming into your first year here, what do you think are realistic expectations for you and the learning curve? How do you anticipate that will go?
You know, this yesterday was really my first day that to even set a baseline and say, okay, this is where we are. I was fairly consistent. I felt like I, our times were really good. But having said that, I've never been in a race with, 42 other cars. You know, I've been to 42 other motorcycles or whatever. So there's going to be a huge, learning experience. Rally is just you on the track. Honestly, I felt like I had the most trouble with trying to do the qualifying laps, like right off the bat. So more than likely, I'll struggle for a bit, on being at the front at the beginning of the race. And, with any luck, we'll be able to, work as a team. I think I had great people around me and, try to continually not crash out, continually get the laps that I need, and, just work on wherever that first base is, work up from there. And I think if I keep making progress on the team, they're basically doing everything possible to make it the easiest possible for me to do the best that I possibly can, which is, what every team's doing, and every driver out there wants to win, but it's going to take time, and I realize that. And, I have high hopes. Every racer out there thinks they can win, but it's just a matter of getting the time in.
Thank you.
I know that didn't answer really anything, but we'll have to see how the first race goes and then kind of go from there.
I got you.
Yeah, can you explain kind of just why you're doing this? I mean, obviously you don't need to do it for your reputation or career.
No, I mean, for me, it's all about waking up every morning with passion. And, when I've always been one to kind of switch maybe before I needed to, or before other people thought was wise. I mean, when I went from motocross to rally, everyone's like, "Why would you possibly do that?" I went then to freestyle. Everyone's like, "Well, all the true guys are always racers." But it's kind of what you're passionate about. I think if you're really passionate about something, you can find a way to make it happen. And in my 27 years, I've been able to just chase a lot of different dreams. And I feel like whenever I feel like I've done as much as I can do in that sport, or I've been as successful as I want to, I feel like my passion kind of leaves a little bit. And for me, it's always about trying to find that passion, and to wake up every morning thinking about nothing else other than what it's going to take to get to the top of whatever sport I'm in. And I think this is the biggest challenge that I've ever had, and it's going to take a lot of time, but I'm willing to put the time in.
That was kind of my follow-up. Do you have kind of a comprehension of how much time it's going to take, and are you ready to give up some of your other activities in order to, if you need to focus on this more?
Oh, for sure, and it's definitely going to come a time when I need to focus on this more, and that time is quickly approaching. I just wanted to really take it, not say easy this first year, but just to kind of understand and get a background of the entire sport. I mean, I've watched it on TV all the time, but unlike what Cole Churchill said, that the coverage on ESPN might not be fully fully comprehensive to a learning tool. So, it's definitely going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of effort. I've gotten to know all the guys through Red Bull, Brian Vickers, and even motorcycle guys, or guys that have come from California that have been friends, like Rick Johnson and Jimmy Johnson. So they are all pretty convinced that I'm going to hit a lot of walls, and I'm
going to be a rough learning curve, but you know, everyone's really behind me and trying to help out as much as they can. So, you know, I'm optimistic to think that I can do this, and you know, we're going to give it everything we got to give a legit effort. You know, I'm going to be looking for a lot of advice. Everyone's like, hey, you know, we're open for questions, but it wasn't until I got in this car yesterday that I really even knew what I should ask. You know, Rick Johnson, who was one of my heroes on motocross, was over. We did the Catalina GP on motorcycles, and he had driven some truck stuff, and he basically said, look, you're going to want to come in too hard. You're going to overcharge the corners. You're thinking you're making up time, and you're going to lose time down the whole next straightaway, which is, you know, pretty basic thinking and philosophy on cars is, you know, okay, just be smooth. But as a motocross racer, you just want to charge in there and make the time up there. And sure enough, I, you know, all the telemetry was basically telling me that that's exactly what I was doing. You know, braking later than everybody, braking harder than everybody, and then slowing down more than everybody and not being able to, you know, really set the car up for the exit. So I think it's just kind of time and learning how to slow down to go faster. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Travis. It's good to talk to you again, partner. You talked a little bit about when you get up in the morning. I imagine at some time you get up in the morning and you looked in the mirror and you saw a motocross racer. For the past few years, you saw a rally driver. What do you see now?
You know, it's good you called. I'm actually really surprised to have you on this call.
NASCAR free, but you know, you've changed all kind of parameters.
NASCAR free radio, Bill Wood, ladies and gentlemen. No, I mean, basically, well, you know, as with the rally, you know, it took 2 years, and you know, everyone's laughing, they're all joking, they're all like, oh yeah, you just, you know, you jump right into the top series. You know, you're going to crash a lot. You're never going to make it. This and that. It's not going to be good. And yeah, they were mostly right for a few rounds. And you know, then we really just buckled down. We knew what we needed to work on. And that was such an awesome challenge to overcome everyone that said you couldn't make it. And I think that's, you know, my whole life, like you know, I was groomed as a racer. And you know, I went into freestyle when everyone said there's no such sport as freestyle. That's where all the, you know, the guys that can't make it in motocross go. And you know, now freestyle's possibly a bigger sport than motocross itself. And you know, it's just, you know, been a combination of a lot of luck and a lot of hard work. But I really think that when I look in the mirror now, and you know, I don't see a NASCAR driver yet, but I sure hope I see myself as one here real soon. So we'll see what happens.
Some of the things you described about driving, the problems getting through the turn, were things that you were doing as a rally driver. How long do you think it's going to be to get that out of your head and to make that conversion to being a stock car driver?
I think it's going to be really difficult because my biggest, I'd say, asset in both motocross and rally was kind of the ability to charge. When, you know, the chips were on the line and bottom of the ninth situation, I could find time. In stock car racing and NASCAR, you can't find a lot of time, but you sure as heck can lose it. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing is, you know, in motocross, you see someone 2 seconds in front of you, you close your eyes, you do a wheelie into a whoop section, you just hit it. In rally cars, you listen to what your co-driver says, and, you know, if you think you can hold it wide open over a crest, it doesn't matter if it's snowing, both your headlights are busted out and there's a 100-foot cliff on the right, you know, you do it. With NASCAR, it's not that simple because it's like any circuit racing. You know, the course, there's nothing that you can blindly just launch into. So I think it's going to be a big challenge to not be able to just simply go faster. You have to do it through technique and skill, and that's going to take some time.
You shut it.
Shut it!
Can we talk about tires first?
No, please.
It's like,
no, please.
It's like you're...
No.
Rowdy.
In 1967, Richard Petty won 27 cup races. He ran 48 of the 49 events for a winning percentage of 56%.
Dale Jr.? Is it a question of confidence? What does he need to do in the offseason to pull his bacon out of the fire?
Well, there you go. Why don't we do this? Why don't we say this? Brittany Kaysen joining us today on the Rowdy Podcast. Now, you've done some nightlife stuff here in Charlotte, some nightlife reporting, corresponding, and you've told us about NASCAR nightlife before. But now, you're doing more with relationships? Is that what I'm getting from you?
More of the sex, love, advice, kind of sex in the Queen City type
Okay,
stuff.
Sex in the Queen
sex
City.
Sex in the Queen
now,
City.
Now, isn't that clever?
PG-13.
How about this with respect to NASCAR? You're Dale Jr. or Jeff Gordon or Mark Martin, and you've got a new crew chief next year. So from a relationship point of view, what are the important things to do when you're starting up a new relationship? You know what's going to be important, and you want to get off on the right foot, and you know you got to work together and
hold hands.
How do you do that? How do you maintain your individuality but still work together? What do you think are the keys here for, say, Junior and Steve Letarte? What are the keys from a relationship point of view?
Well, it is very important, you know, the pit crew, the crew chief, and the driver relationship. I mean, it sounds gay, but but it is true. I know that Dale Jr. and Lance McGrew used to go out on double dates with their girlfriends.
Uh-huh.
And they had a good friendship-based relationship. So I think that, you know,
That's interesting. Yeah. So they had the friendship side down, but maybe the working side never quite worked
Precisely.
Out.
So you need to gel that sort of relationship. I mean, obviously, it's all about communication, as every relationship is, especially when you're on your radio talking to your crew chief. I mean, let's take, Chad and Jimmy, for example. They seem to be happily married.
They're quite happily married.
They're very happy.
They are.
And it might have all come down to that, you know, when they weren't happily married and Hendrick set them down and literally said, "You're acting like kids. Let's have milk and cookies and talk about this."
So maybe, they got a little relationship therapy.
They did. Yes. From Mr. Hendricks himself.
Absolutely. Well,
that's an interesting point, because it makes me think of this with Jimmy and Chad. They seem very clear on what their roles are. Like, each guy knows, hey, this is my role and this is my role, right? So it seems like that would be important in a relationship, not to be competing for the same role.
But we did see last year sometime when Chad was lying to Jimmy.
That was part of Chad's role, was
yes.
to lie to Jimmy.
He's such a man.
I know.
Oh, that's the problem. They're both men, so they're all lying to each other all the time.
Well, I would say maybe the important thing is to have the DTR talk, which is, you know, inevitable in any dating relationship, the define the relationship talk.
Ah.
So where they say, it's like a light bulb went off.
Yeah, it's just because Bass keeps bringing it up.
I better do that. Yeah. I better get on that real quick.
Well, when they sit down and they say, you know, this is what I expect from you.
Yes.
And this is what I expect from you. This is what you're going to get. I want you to give me 110% in this area, and I will compromise and give you this. I mean, I think for a driver and crew chief relationship, I think that is very important, because if the crew chief is expecting the driver to do one thing and the driver is expecting the crew chief to do the other, and they don't communicate that, then, you know,
that's when you get conflict.
You're going to have milk and cookies flying everywhere.
You're going to have a divorce.
You know, that's another interesting point, because then you're making these, when you get into, you have a DTR conversation and you're defining the relationship. You say you're making kind of commitments, right? You're making promises, right? And you're saying, I'm going to do this. So it's not just, obviously, you should make commitments, but you also have to live up to the commitments that you make. So it's pretty important not to make commitments that you can't keep, right?
Correct. And so, you don't want to keep pissing off your, you know, like Kyle Busch is a perfect example. He pissed his crew chief off a couple times this season. You know, when he said Denny's number one out the window.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing where you also need, when you're acting like that, you need to respect your crew chief, your significant other. You know? So a lot of times, like if I have a significant other, I'm going to respect them in my actions and think about them when I'm doing things. And I think that a lot of, you know, driver crew chief relationship, it needs to be more like that. I mean, when you do something that gets you a penalty, it doesn't just affect you, it affects your crew chief and your entire crew and your entire team and all your fans.
You just can't give all the time. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, give. What do you want?
All you do, you give all the time, and then pretty much you lose your identity.
Yeah, then
you know.
You give too much, and then you feel forced to take. It's not healthy, Bob.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Because then you take, and it's not good. Well, do you think, Brittany, that there? It's interesting. I mean, we joke about the male thing, but there is, like, it's all men. You know, for the most part. I mean, there's women sprinkled here and there, but when you're talking about functioning race teams, you're talking about a bunch of men getting along and working together, it seems like there might be some problems that would typically crop up with a bunch of men, like maybe not being in touch with their feelings, say, for example, or having a problem expressing themselves in a productive way. You know, I'm just, I don't know. It would seem to me that maybe those are issues that race teams would have to deal with.
I mean, it's just like, you know, when you get a group of women and you get a group of men in any type of profession, you know, banking, everything, I refer to it as the corporate cockfight. Because you have egos fighting another ego. And that, again, the determining the relationship, I mean, that might be a good aspect of it is, you know, for the driver to realize that the crew chief is equally as important to him. You know, the driver might be behind the wheel, but the crew chief is behind the wheel as well, just not physically there.
Right.
So to understand that, you know, they're teammates and they're working together instead of having egos fighting each other. I mean, I'm pretty sure that that's just kind of a typical man thing. You have that, you know, on any team, on football teams. You know, I mean,
right.
Joe Cinco and Terrell Owens, when I heard that they were becoming teammates, and I'm like, yeah, that's going to be the demise of the Bengals.
Right.
It's interesting because Jimmy Johnson, on many levels, seems fairly egoless. And when I edit a lot of the press conferences afterwards, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's Tony Stewart being interviewed or it's Clint Boyer being interviewed. But when it's Jimmy Johnson being interviewed, half the time it's Chad Knauss actually doing all the talking. He just goes out and lets Chad talk. And it doesn't seem to, you know, he doesn't have to shoot his mouth off. They really work very, very well together.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I know you know Denny Hamlin a little bit better than a lot of the guys. And his relationship with Mike Ford is kind of an interesting one because they seem like they have a very good working relationship, but they don't always seem on the same page with what they say to the press.
No, they don't. They don't.
You know what I mean? They say different
things sometimes. And they'll admit it, too.
And they'll say, yeah, I don't agree with that, with what he said. You know, it's kind of an interesting relationship. It's not the same as Jimmy and Chad, it seems like. It seems
open
a little bit
different.
Open
communication, though. Again, communication's
right.
A key in your relationship.
Right. So it's like you don't have to be the same as long as you understand where the other person's coming from and you have clear expectations about what they're going to do and not do and all that kind of stuff.
Precisely. Define the relationship. Define expectations. Communicative. I mean, I think they can all live happily ever after.
Wow.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be nice? Now, one more thing before we let you go on this relationship deal. You mentioned Rick Hendrick and the milk and cookies thing. What's the role of an owner in this? I mean, what the owner, obviously he doesn't want to get into the middle of this.
He's the marriage counselor, though.
And the team there, but is he, in a sense, the counselor? We think of certain owners as being great with people. And the two guys I think of are Rick Hendrick and Joe Gibbs as being just really smart at managing people. And you find that they tend to give responsibility to their key people. They're not micromanaging by any stretch of the imagination what goes on in their race team. But what's the owner's role in this kind of structure, do you think?
Well, I would kind of see him as like the mother-in-law that everyone's trying to please and make happy.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, no, I would say it is, like you said, the marriage counselor, especially in those scenarios. But like, and they don't micromanage. So, I mean, maybe they're just kind of like the priest that marries the two,
divorces them.
Or divorces them, or just switches them around.
A bunch of
swingers at the Hendricks.
No,
you know?
I know, really. You're not kidding. Good grief. That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of, you know, just an example. Like Lance and Junior were friends off the track, but on the track, you know, they didn't make a good couple. So they had to break up.
Right.
But I'm sure they'll still be
friends.
They'll
still be friends.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Just because we went out and we broke up doesn't mean we still can't be friends, right?
Exactly. Especially when there's two mature participants involved.
Now, that was an interesting one. Well, yes. Now, the other interesting one is Jeff Gordon and Steve Letard. Because it didn't seem as though, from the outside, that those guys were having problems or anything like that. And yet they weren't achieving what they wanted to achieve, which was race wins and running for a championship. And they kind of slipped at the end of last year. That was a case where maybe without the junior situation, those guys stick together. But Rick saw an opportunity to kind of change things up a little bit. How would you assess that relationship?
I was actually about to say exactly what you said. Is that I think since there was internal movement, they decided to just kind of mix it all up. And I mean, maybe
they call that wife swapping.
That's what it seems like.
It seems like wife swapping to me.
It is an episode of Wife Swap.
It really is. Kind of hanky-panky.
What kind of hanky-panky are they doing over there?
They're swingers.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, Brittany, thanks for coming in. Now, we were talking to Brittany a lot, Buck, about, you know, having her more involved in 2011.
11, yes.
When the season comes down. So you'll be seeing and hearing a lot more from Miss Brittany here in the future here on Rowdy.
I'm very sorry for you guys.
No, I'm not. I'm not sorry for me.
It's good for us.
It is good for us.
I like getting rowdy. What can I say?
What can she say? She likes getting rowdy.
There you go.
And we're happy to oblige.
And I did have to explain to some people, though, that Rowdy is not a website dedicated only to Kyle Busch.
Cowboy.
Yeah. We have a lot of Kyle Busch fans, but that's right. It's not just Kyle Busch.
No, it's not.
It's rowdy in general.
It's generally rowdy. And the truth is, we were rowdy before Kyle Busch was rowdy.
Yes, we were.
We were rowdy back in like 2002. Buddy.
We were.
So basically, he copied your nickname?
He copied our nickname.
Kind of the way it worked out.
Sort of came from the same thing.
But that's
thing,
okay. But that's we're not, you know.
Speaking of rowdy and relationships, Samantha and Kyle are getting married.
They are.
Yes, they are.
They're getting married on New Year's in Chicago.
Okay. In Chicago.
Nice. Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. I saw the invitation, and each invitation must have cost like $100+.
Oh, really?
I mean, it was like you pull it out, and there's this like elaborate peacock feather with like this gold calligraphy that you could tell was professionally done.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I pulled it out. I was like, whoop. No wonder his race team's not doing so well.
Spending all the money on calligraphy and cards.
Yeah.
Invitations.
There's a cautionary tale.
What?
When you got a lot of money, don't spend it.
Okay, Buck.
There you go.
Keep that in mind. Would you like to do the honors?
Kirk out!